I didn't realize something this dark was going on in my adopted hometown.
It's a billion-dollar industry. Sex trafficking.
She was seduced by a boyfriend who said they were going to start their life together, and none of that was true.
The whole business model is seduction.
Victims held against their will, forced into sexual slavery. And it's happening every day in our own backyards.
I woke up in a dark room. Someone was on top of me, raping me.
It was a house of evil. They're just structures for sex.
These are violent sociopaths who run these places.
The whole goal is to compel these girls to make money for them.
Everything that I did was controlled by him.
You can't buy somebody else. It's slavery.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own. It's America's leading journal, Vanity Fair. Writer Mimi Swartz uncovers the horror of women locked up next door. June 2005, an unidentified 16-year-old girl calls a domestic abuse hotline. She frantically begs for help.
She tells me she was seduced by a boyfriend who said they were going to come here and start their life together, and none of that was true.
Dottie Laster, a victim's advocate, is called to the scene by hotline workers. She recovers the girl and brings her to a nearby women's shelter.
She was calling from a payphone, and I knew it wasn't a call for domestic violence. It was a call for trafficking. She had been prostituted.
There's a reason that prostitution is called the oldest profession. It was seen for so many years as a victimless crime.
Today and every day, record numbers of women work in this thriving, perilous industry, and not by choice. In fact, tens of thousands are being held captive in this country, in trafficking hotspots like Los Angeles, Atlanta, New Orleans, and New York City. But experts agree that Houston, Texas, may be the worst of them all.
It's very hard for the average person to accept it's going on in their neighborhoods, in their cities, to young women that their daughters may have gone to school with.
Mimi Swartz, a contributor to Vanity Fair, and now the executive editor of Texas Monthly, has investigated the issue extensively in her hometown.
Houston is at the intersection of two important highways, so it's very easy to get women anywhere quickly.
Houston is a hub. You can be down at the border in 6 hours or less. It's just a pipeline.
Well, it's a form of modern-day slavery found today on Houston streets. Women trapped by sex traffickers, sometimes held captive for years.
It's under your nose sometimes, and you may not even know.
We turn to the often unspeakable horror of women forced into sexual slavery here in America.
Women as young as 12 years old are being sold for sex.
Some groups estimate as much as 80% of men have paid for sex. And what these Johns don't realize is that many prostitutes are victims of human trafficking and viewed as sex slaves.
Dottie Laster has been working with sex trafficking victims for more than 10 years. Now, the teenager she just helped rescue is telling her an all-too-familiar story. The young woman says she was prostituted by a man she believed was her boyfriend, Gerardo El Gallo Salazar, a ruthless sex trafficker nicknamed the Rooster. Houston authorities have been tracking his operation for the past 8 months, searching for a victim willing to identify El Gallo and turn evidence against him.
Tying it to what other information law enforcement had already gathered over this long period of time, she was the golden piece of evidence that they needed.
El Gallo, his organization, they would romance girls in Mexico, tell them that they were gonna come to the U.S. in search of the American dream.
They're in these places where there's no hope. Some guy comes along and says, I can take you to the U.S. You can make enough money to get your family out of here. It sounds like a great deal.
The 16-year-old victim confirms what investigators have long suspected about El Gallo's organization.
Once they got here to the United States, they would make the girls engage in prostitution. Once they got that group of girls under control, they go back to Mexico and do the same thing to another group of girls.
Maria Gomez, another young woman recruited by El Gallo's organization, was brought to the United States in 2004.
Al sentir que uno no le toma, o sea, no tiene la vida, hay momentos, sí, que uno desea no vivir.
El Gallo keeps the women locked up in the Willow Creek Apartments, a large complex near the port of Houston. State and federal agents working the case suspect that more than 25 women are being held here.
They're locked in. Most of them don't speak the language. They have no idea what kind of city they're in. They don't know how to get around. They have no free will whatsoever.
Every night, they are taken to local cantinas.
A cantina looks like a bar. It's a bunch of guys hanging around, and then there's a girl there who sits down and starts talking to you, and she's attractive, and she wants you to buy her a beer.
You may be able to buy a beer that's worth $3 for $20, and the girl comes with it, the waitress.
And the trafficker will go to a lot of trouble to make it seem like she's perfectly willing to go into a back room and have sex with you. The whole business model is seduction.
El Gallo and his associates rotate the women between two clubs, La Costanita and Maria Bonita. The cantinas appear to be legitimate drinking establishments, but a secret passageway in each leads to a warren of tiny rooms in the rear with bare light bulbs and filthy mattresses.
Maria Bonita, in fact, the actual house of prostitution was behind the building, and they would go through false mirrors that were actually these secret doors to the outside. These places were horrible. They're just structures for just for sex, pure and simple. It wasn't like a hotel room. It was plywood walls, red lights.
It's almost even hard to talk about, frankly. On weekends, the girls would sometimes have to sleep with 30 men a day.
O sea, y uno muchas veces cada uno habla y dice, ¿me puedes ayudar? Y por favor, ¿tú podrías? La respuesta es no, no. Lo siento, no puedo.
That's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's sister. That's somebody's mom. And you sit back and you go, what's wrong with you?
A kilo of cocaine is smuggled into our country. Once that kilo of cocaine is used, it's gone. A victim of human trafficking, a human being, that commodity can be used over and over and over and over.
It's big business. Houston's sex trafficking rings like El Gallo's have been known to take in more than $1.5 million a year, tax-free. El Gallo and his men make it clear to everyone that they will do whatever it takes to keep the business running.
There's a culture of violence in the cantinas that just extends to the women. These are violent sociopaths who run these places.
The whole goal is to compel these girls to make money for them. El Gallo threatened a girl that if they escaped, he would shoot them in the spine and paralyze them.
Si le dicen, no vas a hablar, tu familia allá le puede pasar cualquier cosa. Mi miedo era mi familia.
You're in a different country. You've been told that you run, you're gonna die, your family's gonna die. Who do you go to? Who do you trust?
In September 2005, after months of investigation and with a victim willing to testify, local, state, and federal authorities execute a series of raids throughout the entire El Gallo organization.
Ya es altas horas de la noche. Yo escuché que el que no que no lleve nada, o sea, ponte los zapatos, ropa y vámonos.
The prostitution ring's leader, Gerardo El Gallo Salazar, is charged with conspiracy and sex trafficking. The arrests begin, and his men are picked up one by one, saving El Gallo for last.
Out of the six defendants, everybody gets arrested, except for El Gallo. He escapes.
Local, state, and federal agents launch an international manhunt. As the years pass, officials believe El Gallo continues to send women from South America to Houston through a clandestine pipeline that law enforcement is unable to pinpoint.
I can speak for every investigator that was involved. We will hunt you down to the ends of the earth.
In August of 2005, Houston's most notorious sex trafficker, Gerardo El Gallo Salazar, vanished. His escape sets off an international manhunt by federal authorities. Salazar earns a place on the FBI's most wanted list. There is a $10,000 reward for information leading to his capture. 5 years after Salazar goes on the run, a red Trans Am is pulled over for speeding down a remote, dusty highway in Mexico. The driver, Gerardo El Gallo Salazar.
He tried to bribe the federales when they finally tracked him down. He'd been bribing law enforcement for as long as he'd been in business.
This time, they don't bite. The federales place him under arrest for attempted bribery. They notify U.S. authorities.
He's in Mexico, he's in custody, but we need to get him back on U.S. soil for him to pay for his actions.
It takes more than 4 years, but in June 2014, Gerardo El Gallo Salazar becomes the first offender ever extradited from Mexico for the crime of sex trafficking. Salazar pleads guilty to 4 counts of harboring undocumented immigrants for prostitution.
He's an animal, for lack of a better word. I don't think he'll ever see the light of day.
Today, a judge sentenced the leader of a sex trafficking ring to 40 years in federal prison.
Salazar will be eligible for supervised release at the age of 91.
The women who spoke up, the victims, they're the heroes in this. To come and sit there and speak out and speak up for themselves and others who couldn't.
Yo pensé que yo iba a morir, pero a este tiempo yo puedo decir que como Dios me tiene, yo soy feliz.
Thanks to the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, Maria now has legal status in the United States. The 16-year-old victim who started it all remains in Houston today. Elsewhere in the city, the Maria Bonita sits abandoned. La Costanita has been bulldozed to the ground.
It was a house of evil. It was a place of evil. Just one of many, and one of many to come. It's a money-making proposition. So they're just gonna set up operations somewhere else. Prostitution's been here since the beginning of time.
The El Gallo case is the exception, not the rule. The commitment it took to prosecute that case was enormous and unusual.
It is only in the past 10 years that law enforcement officials have made the capture of sex traffickers a priority.
These are not kids in faraway lands. These are our kids on our street corners. These are America's children.
I think education is important. not seeing a prostitute as a foreign entity, but as the girl next door, as the girl you went to high school with.
Researchers say the numbers are staggering. 122,000 runaway children are sexually exploited each year.
These stories are nothing new. Almost 50 years ago, this woman says she ran away to escape an abusive home, only to be held captive by a man who promised to take care of her.
I grew up for the first 12 years of my life in Fairfax, Virginia, and I came from a dysfunctional family. I'd already been sexually abused from a young age. The summer I turned 12, I decided to run away from home. I had to go. I really felt like I had to get out of there.
Barbara hitchhikes up Route 50 into Washington, D.C., and makes her way to DuPont Circle, where she meets a young woman named Nancy.
I was sitting in a park, and a young woman approached me, and I started talking to her, and she seemed only a few years older than I was. Maybe at some point she'd been just like me. Maybe she'd been a runaway at some point.
A lot of these women, they are looking for a place that appears safe. And it's the complete opposite.
I went back with her to her apartment, and there was somebody else there that she hadn't mentioned. It was her trafficker.
These guys know how to find vulnerable victims. People who don't have the tools to take care of themselves.
She wasn't ever clearly laying out any plot or any plan. Somebody's not offering me a place to stay for nothing, right?
Nancy begins bringing Barbara to restaurants in the area for dates with older men who pay to have sex with her. Barbara, grateful for Nancy's help, feels powerless to resist.
Traffickers have long figured out how to replace that need for shelter and love and attention, and that's what I wanted. I probably would have robbed a bank if they wanted me to.
After just a few weeks, Nancy and her trafficker take Barbara to meet a friend of theirs.
I thought the same thing was happening that was happening every other day. And they took me to the corner of 14th and I in our nation's capital. Then he came walking down the street. I remember him giving them money. They just told me to go with him, and I did.
Barely 13 years old, Barbara Amaya has just been sold into sexual slavery. She is now the property of a sex trafficker who goes by the name Moses Spears.
I was so young. I really thought he was larger than life when he was 180 pounds, you know, grayish green eyes, 5'7", really just a little worm of a person.
It's a magician's trick to distort their perception of everything in their life. Who loves them, who they should be loyal to, who they should listen to.
As Moses drives Barbara to New York City, he explains she is his girl now. Showing her the gun he wears on his belt, Moses tells Barbara that he will make sure no one ever hurts her again.
He took me to a hotel, and then everything that I did was controlled by him. He was still programming me. These are the rules. This is what you do, this is what you don't do.
Moses teaches the 13-year-old how to walk, dress, and do her makeup. Then he takes Barbara to a street corner in Midtown Manhattan. His instructions are clear. Come back to him with $200 at the end of the night, or don't come back at all.
I was by the Plaza Hotel in the beginning. You know, I had to meet a certain quota every night, and I couldn't go back until I had that amount of money. And if I tried to go back, I would get beaten.
Over the next 3 years, Barbara is arrested multiple times and begins to build a criminal record.
A prostitute was a prostitute, and law enforcement looked at these women and girls as willing participants in whatever was going on.
I learned very, very early on that I was supposed to tell the police that I was 18 or 21, and I had those birth dates down in my brain. I had it all figured out.
By age 16, Barbara Amaya is addicted to heroin.
It just numbed me, and it kept me moving forward, not really living, but just surviving.
After yet another arrest, she is sentenced to serve 30 days at Rikers Island, an eternity to a child experiencing heroin withdrawal.
I was so scared. I started banging on my cell, asking to talk to the guard. I didn't care anymore. I told them, here's my name. I'm from Fairfax, Virginia. I'm 16. I'm not supposed to be in here.
Realizing that Barbara is a minor, the guards move quickly to get her out of the adult jail.
And they told me my parents were coming to get me. I was ashamed, deeply, horribly ashamed. The guard is leading me down the hall to the room where they're waiting for me. My heart was beating so fast, and they opened the door, and it wasn't my mother and father.
Barbara is not prepared for who is waiting for her on the other side of that door. ...16-year-old Barbara Amaya has spent almost 2 years on the streets of New York City, trafficked by a violent pimp named Moses Spears. And after yet another arrest, she finds herself behind bars at Rikers Island. After asking her jailers to contact her parents, Barbara is about to be released.
I opened the door, and it wasn't my mother and father. There was my trafficker. There was Moses standing there.
Stunned and shaking from heroin withdrawal, Barbara says nothing. She gets into the car with Moses and drives off with him.
People say, you had an opportunity, you could have left. Well, when they're so overwhelmed, they just freeze, they shut down.
Over the next several years, Barbara sinks deeper into heroin addiction. By the time she reaches her 20s, life on the streets has taken its toll.
I was 5'9", like 99 pounds, on death's door. I went to this drug rehab clinic, and the woman there took time to treat me like a human being. At that same exact time when I was going to that drug clinic, Moses had been arrested on weapons and drugs charges, and he was in prison.
Barbara would never see Moses again. Free of the drugs and her trafficker, Barbara begins to slowly rebuild her life.
Everything that I survived was for a reason. It was because I could be here now doing the work I do today.
Barbara Amaya documents her experience in Nobody's Girl and works as an advocate for women and girls like herself.
When a little girl is sold and then imprisoned in a brothel and tortured if she resists, that's slavery. It is barbaric and it is evil and it has no place in a civilized world.
Sex trafficking happens all up and down the economic ladder. It happens up and down the social ladder. So anyone who is vulnerable could end up in this profession, especially a woman who's had a terrible childhood.
In the winter of 1996, Aubrey Lloyd celebrates her 16th birthday. She lives with her mother and younger sister, Corey, in Colorado Springs.
My father wasn't around, and my mother had me shortly after my father was no longer in the picture, so she was almost immediately a single mom. She worked a lot, so there were times when she wouldn't be home, and we kind of had to figure out how to take care of things by herself.
When Aubrey's mother is home, Aubrey says she drinks heavily.
My mom started really spiraling with her addiction. She had a long history of substance abuse.
Consumed by her addiction, Aubrey says her mother could not protect her from other family members.
I was not only sexually abused by my grandfather, but also my uncle.
Aubrey says the abuse started when she was 7 years old. She tried to tell those closest to her about the assaults, but no one helped.
No one believed me, and so there's no point talking about it.
By the time she's 16 years old, Aubrey's one escape is her job at the local 7-Eleven. It's at the store that Aubrey first meets 18-year-old Teresa.
Teresa looked like a really pretty kind of model teenage girl, kind of who we all wanted to be. And it was almost immediately that I would start going to her house and, you know, being around her family.
The girls start spending their free time together at Teresa's house, where she lives with her mother and her mother's boyfriend, David.
David, you know, he was tall, he was attractive. He, you know, wore nice clothes. He spoke really well.
Over the next several months, Aubrey begins to confide in David and Teresa.
Teresa and David would talk to me about my past, and they knew that I had been abused. Then this one particular night, I just remember having this fight with my mother. And then I called my friend and she's like, you know what? Me and David are gonna come pick you up. Pack up some stuff. You're gonna come to stay with us. And I was like, okay.
Aubrey says her mother never tried to stop her from leaving that night.
And then Teresa takes me to her house. We sit down at the dinner table. David asked me, so have you ever thought about making some extra money? Well, we actually have an escort service.
David goes on to explain the family business to Aubrey. Teresa and her mother work for him as escorts. He is their business manager.
Teresa would jump in. It's not about sex. You just go out on dates with these really nice, attractive-looking guys. I said I didn't want to be a part of it. They told me that it was okay. I should have got up from the table and went back home, but I had just run away from something.
Later that night, Aubrey and Teresa go to a nearby house party with David.
I was sipping on a, you know, a can of soda that, you know, Teresa had gone and got for me. I remember distinctively sitting on the couch, looking around, and then just my memory goes completely black. And I woke up in a dark room where someone was on top of me, physically raping me. I remember starting to cry and just, you know, make the stop. When the sexual assault was over, the person left the room. And then a light clicked on, and it was David. My first instinct was he was there to rescue me. But then David said, this is the last time you're ever going to tell me no. Get dressed and get upstairs.
That's when Aubrey realizes she was not just raped, she was sold. David had just procured a 16-year-old for one of his clients.
It's very hard to find a sex trafficking victim who wasn't sexually assaulted into submission, who wasn't given drugs to do what she's told to do.
Sergeant Craig Simpson and other officers formed an undercover sex trafficking unit in Colorado Springs, Aubrey's hometown, to target ruthless men like David.
Sex trafficking is occurring everywhere. We do work in an undercover capacity because it's under the thin guise of being an escort service. These are all girls who are being exploited.
Colorado Springs, prime trafficking territory for several reasons, one being the interstate trade route.
Aubrey feels trapped by David and Teresa. They carefully monitor her every move. And going home is not an option. She says she was just one of several young women that David sold for sex.
You were being raped every single night. I had no ability to say no. And if I did something to upset him, I would get hit. He would physically choke me until I started to lose consciousness.
This is not a victimless crime that can remain swept under the rug or remain out of the view of the general consciousness.
Most of the time we were being sold in these like house parties, but you would get promoted to go on solo dates. I remember I had a solo client came and picked me up, and he took me to a park, and there was another gentleman there. And I immediately got nervous. This is not what is supposed to happen. I'm going to tell David. And he's like, David knows. And I was physically assaulted by both of these men. And I remember in the middle of that assault, hoping that I would die. Opening my eyes and being a little bit mad that I was still alive.
There's no protection for these girls at all. This is a crime that spans the economic spectrum. You've got girls who go for $5. You've got girls who go for $5,000.
Because she is just 16 years old, Aubrey Lloyd is sold for as much as $1,500 a night.
I'm not a 16-year-old getting ready to have a boyfriend that invites me to prom. I'm a 16-year-old girl as having sex with married men and trying to survive from night to night.
David puts Aubrey to work 7 days a week. She doesn't even try to count the number of clients. There are so many. And who they are may surprise you.
A lot of them would talk to me about their kids and about their spouse. They would talk to me about their careers. So we're talking about doctors and lawyers, good citizens in your community.
Police say this sort of thing is a growing problem in our area, and the customers willing to take advantage of the situation could be right under your nose.
They don't see the girl they're having sex with as a victim, but they're committing rape. There's no doubt about it.
They're buying a human being. We got rid of slavery, or so we thought. This is just another rendition of slavery.
For more than a year, Aubrey has no contact with her mother. Her family has no idea that Aubrey is living in fear for her life. Then one night, as she's waiting for a client to pick her up, Aubrey is confronted by one of David's longtime associates, a drug dealer.
This gentleman said, "You know what? I really don't think you're supposed to be here. You're leaving. And if you come back, I'm going to tell David that you're talking to the police. If this guy tells David, myself, my mom, my sister, my grandmother, everyone I know is going to be dead."
In a rare flash of conscience, the drug dealer decides it's time for Aubrey, a minor, to get away from David. Now, Aubrey has to decide what is the greater risk, running away from David's wrath or staying to face it. Seventeen-year-old Aubrey Lloyd left home a year ago. Her family believes she has run away because of tensions at home. They have no idea that she's living in constant fear, held hostage by David, a sex trafficker in Colorado Springs. Aubrey says she was one of several minors he sold for sex.
There were girls that I saw them physically beat, and then the girl disappeared. Did she die? I don't know. Did she get moved to another place? I don't know. Could I have asked those questions? No.
A drug dealer inside David's organization says he is worried about Aubrey, and he wants her to make a run for it. To force the issue, he threatens to inform David that she's ratted him out to the police. It's a lie, but one that he believes will force the 17-year-old to save herself.
The traffickers make the girl fear that if you're contacted by law enforcement, you're gonna get beaten like you've never been beaten before.
I got scared when my regular client came and picked me up. I was a sobbing mess. And he was like, "I don't know what to do with you."
Aubrey begs him to take her to the one safe place she can think of, her grandmother's house.
And so he took me a couple blocks away from my grandma's, then dropped me off. I remember the physical shaking, even up to my grandmother's door.
Aubrey's grandmother is overjoyed to see her. She tells Aubrey's mother and sister that Aubrey's come home. But she immediately senses that her granddaughter is no longer the innocent little girl she remembers.
My grandmother, she could tell there's something wrong and different with me. I wasn't the same granddaughter. They assumed I was just out running around with guys.
If you have somebody who was a good girl who got seduced into this business, she's going to be ashamed to go home and tell her family what's happened.
I can't talk to people about what's going on. Absolutely no one understands. I was scared of everyone and everything around me.
Aubrey never sees David and Teresa again, and she never goes to the police. Aubrey moves back in with her mother and sister and attempts to get her life back on track.
These women have PTSD, but then their day-to-day functions have also been affected in very negative ways.
I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I was having a hard time doing everything.
In her brokenness and her fear, she questioned a lot. Will I ever be normal?
I just had to wipe my slate clean. I really got dedicated to going back to high school. My plan was just to get out of there as soon as possible. I just needed to get away from everyone.
1 year later, Aubrey graduates from high school. Now 18 years old, she enrolls in Colorado State University and moves out on her own.
People think that once you have all this traumatic experience and background, that your life just has to be a mess, and it doesn't.
Then, just months after beginning classes, Aubrey receives disturbing news. Her 15-year-old sister, Corey, has run away from home.
My sister, she started talking to me about meeting this boy. He was 19, hanging around with 15-year-olds, wanting to give her lots of things, wanting her to not talk to anyone.
Families need to be very aware of some very simple signs, particularly for a young girl that all of a sudden has an older boyfriend.
From the road, Corey calls her sister.
At first it was like, I'm having fun, everything's good, everything's cool. And then it was, but I am stripping, it's not a big deal, it's just dancing.
As the conversations continue, Aubrey is certain that she knows what's really going on. Her younger sister has been recruited by a sex trafficker.
I just felt devastated and completely hopeless that I couldn't be there to protect her.
Strip clubs are one part of the circuit used in the ever-expanding sex trafficking business.
There's a reason they're advertising new girls. There's literally new girls that are being brought in. It's this very big network that is always moving kids around.
They're moved from place to place. Once they start getting a grasp of where they are, they're packed up and moved. So the disorientation is part of the plan.
Aubrey tries to track down her little sister, but she is constantly moved from city to city. As the months pass, Aubrey has only one thought. Can I find Corey before it's too late? For more than a year, Aubrey Lloyd has been on the hunt for her younger sister, 16-year-old Corey, who she believes is being trafficked across the country in strip clubs.
I was told that my sister was sold through Colorado, through Texas, through Louisiana, and we finally found her in Portland. She had recently been beaten. We ended up getting her a bus ticket to get home. She was emaciated. She had sores all over her body. That's the way trafficking just destroys a person.
Nobody can survive that unscathed. They'll bear the ramifications of this for the rest of their lives.
Corey moves back in with her family. Like most trafficking victims, life at home is difficult, and Corey struggles physically and emotionally to process everything she's been through.
It's a little like breaking out of a cult. It's how many people have the psychological ability to break free after being brainwashed.
2 weeks after Corey returns home, Aubrey receives the phone call she feared the most. 16-year-old Corey Lloyd has taken her own life. To this day, Aubrey regrets that she could have done more to help her little sister.
She called me. I didn't know what to say to her. And so she died. She didn't think that she had any other option. I couldn't save my sister. I remember sitting in the dark, and my world was lost.
Aubrey commits herself to helping other young women like Corey. And in the process, she begins to heal.
It's happening in every community, and we have to do something.
Real men don't buy girls. I mean, that's the message we need to get out there. You can't buy somebody else. You cannot. It's slavery.
You've got to get the men to look at themselves in a way that I don't think they want to. This isn't a woman who's willingly doing this. This is someone who's held against her will. You're raping somebody.
It's criminals preying on our youth, our beautiful, our innocent, harvesting them for sex and greed. And they're everywhere.
You think it's okay because you think you're not hurting anyone? Take a second look and look at that girl. Is she really smiling? Do you really think so? It's not a victimless crime. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of in my life, you know?